Wake up, wake up.
Hi, I'm Matthew Carlock, and you're listening to another episode of Sleep Deprived Storytime, where I go over the what's, where's, who, how's, when's, and oh my gods of raising my two kids. This is an incredibly exhausting but ultimately rewarding experience. Let's chat.
Now let's get on with the show.
Welcome back, friends, family, new friends from the internet. We are going to jump right in, and I just want to say at first, I apologize. I am downstairs at the moment while my kid is upstairs being sick, but also watching Power Rangers. So if there's background noise, blame Albert. Okay, so the podcast is taking me longer to record than I thought. I'm sorry. I thought there would be more time, I would have more energy to do it, and wouldn't you know it, I don't. But we're getting in as we can, and I'm still aiming for the magic number of 10, to have 10 by summer, so I just need to record like 8 more or something like that. What I want to start trying now, I'm going to be adding a new segment called Listeners' Questions or Comments. So, if you're listening on Anchor, I'm sure there's a button or something that you can send a voice message to. Please send it along. But if you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or Google, instead, you can just hit me up on Instagram at ColracM. That's at KColracM. Send me messages there, direct message at me. Or if you're on the Twits, you can send a message to our podcast on Twitter. That's at SDST Podcast, Sleep Deprived Storytime Podcast. If you do that, I'll do my best to read your statement, give you a mention, what have you, because you know I'm listened to by so many people. I wonder if the people in Europe, in Australia, New Zealand are still listening to me. Anyway, we'll find out. Okay, on to the show. I changed gears. Today I was going to talk about what my kids find on the floor that is apparently more nutritious than the food we put in front of them. I'm going to save that for another time. Today's topic is going to be advice for dads, or mostly soon-to-be dads, those thinking of having kids. And the working title is, What You Don't Expect When You're Expecting. I know, clever, right? I'm just that kind of clever guy. So, if you've listened to other episodes, season 1, season 2, you know that I've teetered back and forth. I talked about the importance of hobbies. I've talked about staying goal-oriented and directed, giving yourself some space, giving yourself some time. I mean, that's nothing new. All experts and other parents and dads will say the same thing. It's hard to follow. It's hard to follow that advice. It's super hard to follow that advice sometimes because of how much you give to your family. What the internet and books will tell you is how important it is to do stuff. So you expect that some of your time will be taken up. You expect that a lot of your focus, determination, drive, goal setting is a matter of willpower. It's not. You could still have the drive to do all the things, but you will just find yourself reoriented. You will find new things that are important, and deciding what those new things are is sometimes not even a choice that you get to make. Your brain, your body, your family, your obligations do it for you. Professionally, for example, myself, I teach. That's not a secret. I've been trying to get an administration. I've been trying for almost 5 years. No, about 5 years now. I got certification. I'm doing well with leadership roles and stuff like that, but I'm just, oof. It's still, I'm not doing the self-sacrifice things that need to be done to get the best kind of experiences. I fully acknowledge it. I'm not putting myself out there for doing lots of summer school or after school activities, which is what would probably help me out in this job front, because I use my summers with my family or to recuperate. Personally, there's only so much time in the day. I either dedicate the extra time I have to sleeping, to podcasting, to playing music, to reading, to writing, but I can only do one of those at a time. And for the last almost year or so, it's been just resting, recuperating. I am only 20% joking when I say I haven't slept well since 2018. Sure, I'll get the odd night here and there, maybe once every couple of weeks, once a month or something like that. I'll get a lot of sleep, usually when I'm sick. Uh-oh, I'm hearing some footfalls. Let's see. You coming downstairs, bud? Yes, he is. All right. I'm just going to let this roll for a second. What you want, bud?
I'm all waking up with
the Dino Fury Power Rangers show. You're done with the Dino Fury Power Rangers show? What do you want to do now? I'm talking into my microphone. You want to say hi, microphone?
Hi, microphone.
Some people might listen to it. We'll see. You feeling better? Yeah, a little bit. Okay. Tell you what, I'm going to pause this, and then I'm going to come upstairs, and maybe I can get you some food and some more snack or something.
Yeah. I light the door and so that this trophy-looking thing has...
Me too.
I like what it looks like.
Okay, sorry about that. Continuing the conversation. Where I am in life, my example story. I'm home right now, as you could tell from that brief aside. Because my kid is sick. Again. Already talked about sickness in this house, and it is still ever present. This is strep number 3 in like 6 months. It's very worrisome when he gets strep. All energy leaves, and he doesn't want to do anything. But at least this time we caught it early, got the antibiotics early. He's already making some kind of recovery. But more to the point, that has really impacted my advancement. Not really, but it has definitely impacted me in my work. I have no leave time left. I got 3 or 4 days coming up where I'm going to be taking leave without pay. I'm pretty sure I'm taking leave without pay today. So that's like a week's worth of work that I'm missing and not getting paid for, even though, you know, I have a full-time job with that kind of stuff, because I did sick so much, and that you can bet that that definitely impacts when I'm trying to get stuff done, trying to look as well put together and as professional as possible. Personally, it also impacts things. Yes, today I got lucky and I'm able to record. Ooh, big coughs. I'm able to record while he's upstairs sick, but that's not it all the time. Most of the time I'm just upstairs in his room with him, sitting next to him, making sure that if he is going to vomit, I can be there for him, or I'm catching up on emails. Another thing that takes a hit almost all the time is your relationship with your significant other. So we've hit rough patches, like most people will talk about. And I'm going to get into more detail about that at the end of this episode. But literally, just understand that what everything tells you you need to do in order to keep sane and keep away the depression and make sure that you make time for yourself, it's really good advice, but super, super difficult to follow when your brain goes and tells you that's not important right now. And yeah, there's an argument to be made that the articles say that you have to make this time for yourself because you'll work yourself into the ground. And that is very, very true. But it is also something a little bit more than that. It is a drive, I guess. It is a focus that I've experienced when it comes to my family. I will do anything and everything for them, and their happiness is what will sustain me for more or less. On that note, I had a conversation with a friend which prompted this idea. They asked, like, is there anything that, you know, to keep in mind that I didn't keep in mind or that I wish I had kept in mind? And the main thing was the main advice that I gave him was more or less about relationships. I'm going to read some text that I sent him. For the first kid, I think the most important thing to consider is that both of you are definitely ready to jump in with both feet. You have to be physically, mentally, emotionally ready for the battering you will take. I'm only 20% joking when I say I haven't slept since 2018. Hear that joke repeating? I think the most important piece of having the first kid was our rock-solid relationship. It felt, and at times still feels like, Dad has to pick up all the slack and has to put themselves in the back burner for the first 6 months to a year, unless you have lots of outside help. But, to be sure, expressed appreciation for the work that I was doing by my partner. That acknowledgement helps me know that what I'm doing is right and definitely worth it. I think a kid only becomes a wrecking ball when the relationship is based on countering or owing one another, keeping scores. Basically, you become two people who cohabitate a space. Sure, they might get along extremely well, they might even complement each other, but parenting has shown me more than any other event in our lives that our partnership is what makes us strong parents. When you parent with a partner, there are unspoken dependencies you give one another. Chores are no longer divided. They are no longer her jobs, their jobs, your jobs. All work is done by both of you to make the house function. You will find roles that best fit you as your kids get older, as a relationship and this new dichotomy evolves. But it's something that you fall into naturally. It's not necessarily assigned. Those two chunks of texts were just talking about, were in answers to questions about, how did I feel about a kid messing up the relationship, or what were my fears or anything, and the best advice that I could possibly give after saying, like, you know, the old cliches, there's no good time, just do it. Or I didn't say just do it. There's no good times for planning in kid, because you can plan and plan and plan and there will always not be a great time. For us, we kind of just pulled that band-aid and said, all right, this is the time, let's do it. But we were able to because I really truly believe we weren't, you know, made to be parents. Me and my wife, it was something that we decided. Personally, I feel like I was made to be a parent. But with the partner, it's that dual choice that you make together. And not forcing the issue, making sure that we were both ready, has put us on equal footing with damn near everything concerning parenting. But I'll go into a little bit more detail about how I felt, or sometimes still feel, that like I got to pick up the slack. I do all the cooking, do a clean up the kitchen most of the time. But it was also in response to things that I felt. So I'll get into more of that when we come back and we talk about what the experts say. Okay, so what do the experts say? Well, one of the things that I had trouble finding back when my first kid was born in 2018 was anything past, anything for advice for fathers past Don't Be a Dummy books or articles or podcasts. I really felt kind of left out of there. I wasn't worried about how to prepare for a kid. I wasn't worried about what to do with a new baby or things like that. I wanted to know what was going to happen with me and to us. And that there was surprisingly little information. Some of the websites I looked up today for this, as examples, National Childbirth Trusts, parents.com, Today's Parents, fatherly.com. A lot of them have articles focused on what a father experiences for up to the first 6 months. Great. Especially for new fathers. Maybe they just think that dads don't look up information, or everyone after 6 months is just in some kind of groove and they don't care. I'm not exactly sure, but information feels to me to drop off. They're all, to compare, I looked up, you know, the idea for mothers as well, and they go up to like age 4 and 5. A lot of that focuses on, breastfeeding, but also changes in the body, changes in hormone balance, changes in the brain. And that's great. That's wonderful. I'm glad that that information exists, and rightly so. It should exist. I was just wondering where some of that stuff is for dads. When I came across a pretty great article written in 2000 by Joe Kehane, K-E-O-H-A-N-E. He wrote it on menshealth.com. It's titled, "The Unrelenting Agony of Being a Depressed Father." All right, no shade to menshealth.com, but most of the stuff that they have on their websites, their clickbaity articles are always sensationalized with that kind of rhetoric. But do yourself a favor, do the reading. Read the article, because it is long and it has really interesting, good, in-depth pieces of information. One of the first things it talks about is gives examples of fathers and new fathers and the stresses that they encounter, telling stories, anecdotes, and stuff like that. But it has a good focus on the impact of one's family when you're a depressed father. It also talks about, or asks the rhetorical question, why is it so overlooked in men? And I found those fascinating, because it's apparently postpartum depression is definitely a thing, and it's being more looked at seriously in fathers. Rightly so. It took a, it is more focused on women now, but it took a long time to get there, and that sucks, and that impacted everyone. Everyone in society. And now it's becoming more of a, it's been really focused on the last 20, 30 years, postpartum depression being a serious matter to take into consideration. For men, though, it's only in the past like 10 years or so, that, according to this article, that postpartum depression in men is being taken seriously, because when it occurs, the main sufferer, the main one to feel the impact of it is not the father, mother, but the child, specifically the infant, a newborn. There are lots of, there's evidence that it goes into about what happens when a kid is surrounded by a father who is fully depressed, how they act more aggressively towards their kids, react more harshly to crying, are more severe with their punishments. It's not good. And being surrounded by this person, this parent who's on this constant level of mental collapse has an impact on the infant. No duh. I mean, but I'm glad that this is being discussed and that we're talking about it now. Because I definitely experienced it. From 2018, 2019, and before that was rough. It was rough for me. And it was the first time that I started seriously looking at talking to a counselor and looking for some kind of outside help. A lot of the advice online that you'll find specifies or talks about why, like, men experience a depression. And I'm gonna pause it again because now here comes my kid again. Yay! Okay, so reasons why, or some of the starting reasons why, this actually comes from fatherly.com. Moms often have a support network of other women with which to open up about the struggles of being a new mom, explains psychotherapist Jennifer Avila on fatherly.com. Dads are unlikely to have these hard hearts with their male friends. In fact, men often suffer from a friend deficit long before they have kids, which is another reason why the emotional mental stress impact hits men a little bit harder. Reading that was like, oh yeah, that's definitely what happened. Moving around from a lot of places definitely had a friend deficit. In fact, this might be like the first year after moving here in 2015 that I felt like I actually have a group of local friends, which is crazy because I've been here for so long and my kid is only 4 years old. So what was I doing for those 4 years? Well, we're just kind of together, doing things together. One of the other things that I wanted to talk about in the men's health article were some of the risks that the author talks about. Like if you have, I think they said 3 out of these 6 risks, you're at high possibility of getting postpartum depression after a kid is born. Sleep deprivation, well, that just seems unfair, because you're going to get sleep deprivation no matter what. Stress and anxiety, same thing. It's going to happen. So right off the bat, you already have 2 out of 3 out of these 6 that are said to be needed. But some of the other things are racial bias, gatekeeping, lack of role models, and isolation. Well, I can tell you I hit the isolation one pretty much right out the bat. as a father, you feel isolated because while you're at home with your family, you're not necessarily with your family. They're upstairs or in another room. You're by yourself while you're trying to get stuff done. Or if you're working from home, you're isolating yourself anyway, or for whatever number of reasons. So I can tell you, I immediately hit those 3 out of 6. Racial bias, shouldn't have to go into a description about that. Hopefully my listeners understand that racial bias is something that exists. Like, it exists. It's a thing. It exists. And I 100% believe in that. The other two, the lack of role models and gatekeeping. Luckily, I had a pretty great role model. So that couldn't be it. I also didn't hit the racial bias thing. But the gatekeeping thing was interesting. I couldn't understand what it meant, and so luckily there was this little blurb describing it. A partner can become so frustrated that they engage in gatekeeping or limiting access to the baby. Now, this is sometimes a conscious thing, like it mentioned, but I also believe it can be an unconscious thing. This thing happens where, for guys, when your partner is breastfeeding, women are giving up their body, their everything of them to this small human to keep them from surviving, and their brain is telling them to do it, telling them to sacrifice. And they just do it. Mothers just do it because that's the instinct, and it's amazing and kind of terrifying at the same time. Men, we don't experience it on that same level, so it's hard for us to really wrap our mind around. But let me just give you an idea that when breastfeeding is going on, a woman is giving her body and all, her mind is also giving all to that kid, to that little tiny human baby that they're trying to help survive. Their body is not their own. Their mind is not their own. Hormones are not their own. Everything can be triggered from outside. All the bodily functions can be triggered by this outside presence, which is weird and disturbing if you think about it. Because suddenly they can't, they're not in charge of their functions. And so when a guy comes over and wants to partner comes over wanting to come in for a hug, they might get rejected. And it's not out of malice, it's not out of lack of affection, it's they don't want that. They don't want to be touched. They don't want to give themselves to someone else in that moment. Now, that doesn't mean it's not painful. It's painful. It's painful. Speaking from the guy's point of view, it sucks. But it's still, it's what happens. There are tons of articles. Literally, Google gave me back something like 9 billion hits in 0.4 seconds for why do I hate my husband? That's literally what I typed in. And why suddenly do I hate my husband? And most of them were because of your new baby, all these hormones are making you feel this way. So women, you're not alone when maybe your emotions are making you begrudge and become annoyed and actually hate your husband. But for men, when I typed that in, most of the stuff I got was about regular relationship advice and not about the new kid. And not that this really means anything, but Google did take 0.8 seconds to come back with just 2 million hits when it took 0.4 seconds to come back with 9 billion hits for the other question. I'm not a statistician. I can't point out anything what that means. It's just interesting for me to see that. So really this idea that men get sad after a baby is born is not something to ignore. It's not something that you can say, well, I can tough it out. That's part of the reason why you're getting sad, man. If you think that I can just tough this out, that weird machismo, that weird cultural guys got to be strong mentality is what's hurting you. So knock it off, for lack of a better piece of advice. Just knock it off. If you think you're acting or feeling differently, it's because you are, and that should be taken into serious consideration. Okay, final closing note for me. Like, what epiphany or lesson learned did I have? Well, I'm gonna start off by reading the last text message from that conversation I had with a friend about things to consider when having a baby or when trying to decide whether or not to have a baby. I said, I really wish there was some way to truly understand how isolating it sometimes feels as a dad. To give everything you have and more, knowing full well there is no immediate or even near future relief. But the rewards. The smallest, most delicate rewards. The beginning of a smile. The focus of their eyes on yours. The tiny fist curled around your finger. Your heart will be taken away more fully than ever before in your life. And you will find the strength and determination to give more, to do more, to be more for them, for her, and for you. It is a joint decision when deciding whether or not you want to have a child with someone. It must come from both of you. And if you're just that traditional dad, or even non-traditional dads, if you're going to give yourself that title, if you're going to hope to be given that trophy of a title by a young child, you better damn well know that more of you is going to be asked than ever before. But more importantly for me, you will rise. You will get there. You will be that for them, which you want to be. At the very least, that's what I hope for you. Sorry if this one was kind of a downer, but, you know, they're not all fun and games. All right. That's all for me. Until next time, remember to take joy in the little things in life. And as always, get some sleep. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Please support the podcast by liking, sharing, and subscribing on whatever platform you're listening to. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at SDSTPodcast. You can follow me personally on my Instagram and Twitters at KCOLRACM. That's at ColracM. And finally, a big shout out to Albert Maldonado for engineering the sound to perfection and writing our really awesome song. All right. See you next time.